Welcome to episode 143 of the Geocaching Podcast. Good and bad cache locations recorded live on February 23rd, 2010. I'm your host, XFunkX with
Daryl W4 and
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners. That can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is brought to you from donations from awesome geocachers like you. Welcome back, guys. Montu, Daryl, it's another week, it's another podcast, and how have you guys been?
Pretty good. Since the last show, spent most Wednesday downloading the video I'd been shooting up at the trains from my camcorder, then editing it, and then uploading it to the train's new YouTube channel that they've actually put me in charge of. So anyone who wants to view those can simply go to youtube.com/CPGRR. Other than that, also went out and found several caches, closing in on that 350 mark. So I think I'm well on track for hitting over 400, maybe even getting 500 before the year's out. Even found a virtual cache today. Last weekend, helped my wife Jodster place two caches that will be for release at a upcoming event in July. Which we'll hear more about that event at a later date. Daryl, how about you?
Well, first off, congrats on actually getting out and finding some. What virtual did you do, and how did you like that?
The virtual is one that's nearby. It's a great little virtual. When you get to Ground Zero, something very interesting and unique happens, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But
interesting.
It was definitely an interesting cache to go and find that I managed to find this afternoon. Now, looking forward to finding some more. And there's still a few left here in Florida that I haven't found.
Yeah. Well, we're at the point now where it takes us a little bit of a drive to get to almost any of those virtuals. So, you know, we're kind of hoping to plan some trips around going and getting some of the virtuals, not necessarily in our own state now, because it's actually faster to get them out of state than in state. But I spent most of Saturday in prep and then finally recording the new Cachers of the Roundtable that's going to be coming out on March 7th. And that was, again, streamed live to Ustream. Had a lot of fun with that. Played with some of the live switching. So all three of us that were there were actually switching. But for some reason, they don't actually record that. So what you'll see in the Ustream feed is really still just me babbling and being silly. But I did go out that morning and get some shooting done. I had a photo that I actually tweeted that kind of looks like it was shot in the mountains, but that's actually in a parking lot from the local like big box store mall. So what you're looking at is nowhere close to the mountains, and it's only about 4 or 5 feet high, I think. So pretty cool. Gives you an idea of what you can do with some perspectives. And I'm actually going to be starting that Photography for Cacher series both on the blog and here in audio next week. So keep your eyes out for that if that you've been looking for that. And I've had a few emails and tweets from people anxious to see that. So it's coming. You only have to wait a week. And a little over a week, I guess, now for the Cachers of the Roundtable 27. But I'm excited because Sunday I actually got out for some caching. We only found 8 and they were all more challenging finds. We did an earth cache and like 7 puzzle caches. One of them we had started a while back. So, you know, it's nice to finally get that one that we started done before it disappeared or anything. And we had a couple of them that the containers had gone missing. This is a hazard of going out after that first real thaw when people start getting out, is not everyone has had the chance to go out and check on their caches. And some of those might have gone away between the snow plows, the winds, and just the driving snow. So two DNFs we figured wasn't too bad for the first good day we've had this month. Andy, I know you've been working on moving your house, something about rotating it 2 degrees to the left, I think.
Yeah, it took a whole lot of rolling rods and pushing, but we got it done. It's now 2 inches to the left, but you know, it's great. No, seriously, we were rearranging our rooms again this weekend with moving the boys to the other room and putting some closets shelving up and stuff like that. So it was a busy weekend. But now onto the news. We're chock full of news this week. And Montu, can you kick us off with those news items?
In the news, Elias posted a note last Thursday that all of the geocaching.com databases would be taken offline today. February 23rd, starting at 8 p.m. Pacific time for an upgrade. They expect the process to take about 4 hours, during which all geocaching.com services, including the pocket queries and API access used by the geocaching iPhone app and the Trimble Geocaching Navigator, will be inaccessible. So I hope nobody's trying for that first to find tonight. We'll have a link to that post in the show notes if you'd like to check it out.
Well, the other nice thing about that is it also means the reviewers won't be able to publish, so you won't have to worry about those first defines. Also in the news, Smittyware has released version 1.3.2 of CacheMate for the Android this evening, and that update hopes to speed the GPX and location file imports, resolve crashes with records containing HTML, and improve screen performance for the compass. We'll include a link to that in the show notes as well.
As we talked about on our last episode, we would appreciate your feedback. If you can please fill out our survey at geocachingpodcast.com/survey, it'd be greatly appreciated. And there's a link to our video, my video that I did of the GSAC presentation at CacherCon, for kind of a little thanks for filling that out.
And next week will be our March Cacher Coffee Show, so don't miss a live recording at 9:30 Eastern, that's 6:30 Pacific, on March 3rd. Bring your comments, questions, and topics to discuss, and we'll be looking forward to hearing you then.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. One of my goals with the geocaching question of the day is to make you think about some of the things you take for granted in regards to geocaching. For instance, should geocaches be hidden on a fire hydrant? This question caused a little more stir than I expected. Just over half said no, and some quite forcefully. The rest said it should be allowed if the geocache does not interfere with the operation of the hydrant. So tell me, do you think geocaches should be hidden on fire hydrants? Want to find out all this and more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the good and the bad of placing caches in certain locations. We would love to get your feedback from those listening to you live. So if you want to put in some feedback, press the *8 key if you're on the phone, or just hit the request to talk, and if you want to weigh in. So what we're going to do is describe a location and then open it up for discussion about the good and the bad features to watch out for when hiding a cache there. This is only the first session like this, and we're sure to do it again. So if you have a location you'd like to suggest for the next one, please drop us a note as a voicemail, or you can go ahead and press the contact button on our website. So with that, Montu, can you kick us off with the first location?
Now, the first location would be your classic hide, which typically is at the base of a tree, usually about 6 feet off the trail in a wooded area, frequently under a pile of sticks. Now, with this one, I've not had any problems with this. I think this is definitely one of the better hide locations, because usually it is bringing you to a more natural view location to view the surroundings or whatnot.
Yeah, it really depends a lot on where you're located. You know, certain areas you're going to have to worry about washouts, and up here we have to worry about the winters with it being covered by tons of snow.
And I would say too that it's one of those things that you see a lot of. So it would probably be better to, I would say, hang it in the tree somewhere that's not necessarily on the ground. I mean, because you see pile of sticks that's covered up, you're going to know that it, what exactly it is. And if you're off of a trail just a little bit, it's easy to see muggles there. So I would say that's kind of the negative part as far as hiding it there. Now, I can't really think of many other negative spots there, but, you know, those are some points to bring up.
Well, I guess you could probably also talk about the animals that might make nests in there, or, you know, more of that muggle kind of stuff, or, you know, bees or whatever that might find, you know, something about that pile of sticks that they like if it hasn't been found for a while. And as Head Hard Hat is fond of saying, you got to poke it with a stick.
The other thing would be the muggle, not the muggle trail, but the cacher trail leading into it. After a while, depending upon the other foliage and whatnot that is around this tree, people going into it, you know, usually for the most part, caches try to follow an established trail in, but every now and then you get somebody who's maybe following the pointer a little bit too closely, and they start cutting in. They might actually do a 100-foot bushwhack, where if they'd only followed the trail around a little bit more, they would have gotten to it with much less bushwhacking, but in the process damaging a lot of the growth there around it.
Well, that's another good point, is you have to be careful that with a cache like this, you're not trying to place it in a protected area, because you're going to do a lot of damage just by those people walking to and from the cache. But it is, you know, probably the nicest of the hides in many ways. Probably the biggest one that I'd point out, I think, is what Andy had already actually said, and that's, this is the most common, most classic hide. It's the easiest to find. So if you're trying to place a cache that's easy for people to get to and find as their first cache, this is probably the best one.
Yeah, and being in usually in the, you know, the woods or whatever, it's usually lends itself to a bigger cache container, which is also good, especially when you're hunting it with kids. You know, they like to find things that they can put trade swag for, so it's good to have a cache that you can actually put something in.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's move on to our second hide of the evening, and a favorite one in more urban locations is a magnetic key holder on the back of a traffic control box, or even under the pole in that space that you'll usually get between the cement support for it and the actual metal pole.
Yeah, and with these, I would say it's always, I don't know, you have a better chance of muggles calling the cops on it. It looks kind of silly when you're standing there next to, especially with the, like you said, the back of the traffic control box. When you're standing there trying to figure out what's going on, trying to find it, people can see that and think that you're messing with it. You're more likely to cause, especially official muggle, to be called out on you.
Yeah, definitely. And I like these when they're done well. Not so much the key holder, but we've had some where they'll take electrical boxes that are just magnets on the side. So you know, unless you're a geocacher, you're probably not even going to really recognize that it's there. But I always worry about those muggles on these, and when we go and find them, if we can't do it quickly and easily, most of the time we just DNF it and move on.
You know, well, everyone likes to hate the LPCs. It lends itself to a good place to put a cache. I mean, I want to say it's a good cache hide. I'm just saying it's a good place because it is readily available everywhere, and so if you're having trouble finding a good place like a park or a tree, someplace that you can find a unique kind of a cache hide, someplace like the LPC is going to be lend itself to okay things, especially if it's out farther in the like a parking lot. It may not cause as much traffic to, and people won't see you as much.
Well, the LPCs have a place in just those quick finds, but you know, when I mentioned earlier on this one, that void between the pole and the cement, you run a risk of something getting exposed in there. You have, hornets, yellow jackets, those kind of bugs that will nest in there. So you got to be careful with that stuff too, because that can be dangerous. And, you know, whoever's finding it might potentially get themselves hurt.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't necessarily saying that an LPC is a good thing. I was just saying that it lends itself to especially in an urban area, it's going to be an easier place to hide a cache. And, you know, that's what, when it becomes kind of a geolitter, and there's a lot of them, and, you know, that whole type of thing. But it does lend itself to that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, another thing to keep in mind, you know, besides the wasps and the hornets, you've also got spiders who will nest up in some of those areas. And when you were mentioning exposed, I thought for sure you were going to go after this one. Sometimes the wiring gets worn down in there because of the critters that are going up in there. So you do run the risk of possibly grabbing one of those exposed wires and getting a nice electrical shock.
Yeah, and Mandu in the chat room is saying that snakes are a big problem in Australia, and Head Hard Hat reminds us about black windows. And I think that's, North Carolina that you're in, Head Hard Hat?
Well, you know, one of the more fun locations we've seen has been under bridges in a park. So let's talk about a cache hidden along a path, in a path, or under a railroad bridge. Now, the good thing is there's lots of places to hide it. On the bridge, there's lots of different nooks and crannies. You can make it as hard as you want, because if it's over a river, you can kind of make it out over the river, things like that. Those are good things that I like to see, but again, there are their negatives to it too.
Oh, and I'm a big fan of the under the bridge ones, because you can kind of get under there, get out of the way. You know, people aren't necessarily as likely to find it or find you there if it's a footbridge, because, you know, they're walking on top of you. But what you had mentioned here was that railroad bridge, and you've got a hard time even getting that approved if it's a railroad bridge or a traffic bridge, because those are sensitive locations after 9/11, and they don't want anyone mistaking your cache as a bomb. And there's been a few of those that have been detonated because they were mistaken as bombs.
Oh yeah, definitely. And especially like you said, as far as the approver goes, if it's an active railroad, I don't think that they'll approve it, because it is an active railroad. But you know, like you said, there's a lot of places to hide it, but it is, I mean, it's one of those things that I probably would not hide if it's some sort of a transit bridge at all, whether it be a car. Now, rails to trails bridges, that's a different story. I would say that those are okay. Again, you do run the risk of having animals live down there, bees, hornets, spiders, things like that also.
Yeah, there's a lot of good spots down there that you can pretty much be assured are going to be visible enough. You don't have to worry about that so much. But, yeah, I like the bridge ones personally. I go after those every chance I get. You know, and you can always use the troll word in the name, and, you know, I'll search for those and head after those specifically.
So what you're saying is you like trolls.
Well, I like trolling.
Now, here in Florida, unfortunately, there you might actually run into a troll. The bridges are a favorite spot of some of the homeless down here. So you go placing a cache up under there, it very well could go missing, or the next cache that comes looking for it could come face-to-face with somebody that's homeless. Now, most of them are harmless, but every now and then you do run into the homeless person that gets a little bit aggressive because he's been without food or whatnot. So it could cause some problems, too.
Yeah, that's a good point when you're hiding caches along the rail trails. I've seen a lot of rail trails where the homeless have set up camp there. So, you know, just kind of be aware of the surroundings. You know, generally the little hobo camps there aren't going to be a problem, but it's best to probably avoid those.
Yeah, and usually you can see signs of it. You'll see where there might be some bedding or something left around, or definite imprints from where they've been sleeping right there under the bridge or whatnot. So just be careful with those, because you never know.
Now, before we continue on, I want to invite anyone who is listening live to go ahead and call 724-444-7444 and put in our TalkCast ID 7525. Press the star 8 on your keypad. And we do want to hear from you if you guys have a location that you want to discuss that may be good, bad, ugly, whatever. Let's go ahead and talk about it. So again, 724-444-7444. Press star 8 on your keypad or request to talk if you're in our chat room also. Mantu, next location, please.
Well, actually, before we move on to Mantu, I do want to bring up something that KF40X mentioned in the chat room. And that's a lot of the rail trails actually show up as active railroads on maps. And in the U.S., there's actually a reason for that. In many cases, the property that the railroads were on would have to go back to the landowners if the railroad is abandoned. But the rail trails are actually classified as active railroads that can be replaced in time of war so that they can continue to use them as the rail trails. Interesting little tidbit, but that's why you'll see some of those rail trails showing up as active railroads and not as trails. All right, go ahead, Montu.
Now, I've heard many complaints about the this next type, and that's the rock caches being buried in piles of rocks. Thankfully, I've not run into one of these yet, but you know, it's a great container in many situations, but you put one pile of rocks, I mean, one rock in with a pile of rocks, it's in a parking lot, tends to raise the ire of many cashers and can sometimes cause extra suspicion. You're like, what's this guy going, you know, picking through this whole big pile of rocks for?
Yeah, it's a good way to get the local business folks to be introduced to cashers.
Well, and, you know, the good and the bad part of rock hides is there are a lot of hiding spots. That's good. And the bad is there are a lot of hiding spots. So,
yeah, definitely.
I mean, if you're hunting it, it is a pain. I've DNF'd lots of rock caches because I spent a long time and every cache looks the same or every rock looks the same. And, you know, I'm not going to turn over thousands and thousands of rocks just to find one pill container. I can't spend that much time doing it. And especially if I'm out near a road with my kids.
Yeah, I'll take one or two passes, and if I don't see it fairly quickly and easily in a pile of rocks, I just move on. Well, let's move on to number five, and that's going to be another popular location, which is the fences along the edges of parks or cemeteries. And I've been driven insane by the bison tubes and the grapevines more than a few times. I love the history of the cemeteries, though, so I'll still try for a lot of these.
Yeah, and I like those because they're good places to different, you know, they're good places to, because you are in a park already. And so it's away from people. There's a lot of open space. I like them. They're fairly easy to find, but you know what? We need to still ask permission to place them there because they are public property. They are, you know, the parks department, things like that. So that no matter what, I don't know if you consider that good or bad. I consider that good that you need to have permission for it. But, you know, you do need to have permission and you do need to make that available to the reviewer too.
Well, and in the case of the cemeteries, under the new guidelines, you have to have permission and you have to provide that information to the reviewer. So, you know, that's one where you definitely have to have that info handy.
And one thing I think that at least with these areas which could be considered sensitive, sometimes maybe even need to go ahead and post in the on the cache who it was that you got the approval from, which could save a cacher a trip to the jail. You know, if this is something where it might draw some official eyes falling upon you, if you can tell, well, yeah, so-and-so got permission from John Smith, the manager of the store or whatever, it's going to be likely to get you off the hook a lot quicker.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, you mentioned sensitive area. And again, we could be dealing with things like gardens, which, you know, that's a sensitive area. If people are going to be stepping in it, you're going to be killing plants. So you got to kind of watch the surroundings again. It kind of goes back to that whole thing there of, you know, watch what you're doing and think about the impact of the cashers.
Yeah. And same thing, you know, with the cemeteries that, I mean, a lot of times you can go and find where the cache is hidden because it's usually at the back of the cemetery. But, you know, a lot of times people don't think when they're tramping over gravestones to get to the back of the cemetery that there are people buried there and it is unrespectful to walk over them a lot of times. And so that could be a good thing or, you know, a bad thing. Cemeteries and caches and cemeteries, you know, it's nice because there are a lot of different places. If you're a placer, you can go to and find a cemetery almost anywhere. But the bad thing is, again, those are sensitive areas. There are people buried there. How would you like if you had people playing games where your relatives were buried? I don't think I'd mind it, but some people would.
Yeah, it all depends on who's visiting, and not everyone has the same views toward anything. So, you know, there's always going to be that person that will say something's black and another that says it's white.
True. Now, going back to Montu's rock cache, there's one that comes to mind from a garden in front of a Colorado school about a year ago. That was a good case of location, which is probably a good spot to simply avoid. But in general, What about garden caches? What do you think?
Well, we kind of already mentioned a little bit in the last one. You got to be careful that people aren't going to step on them. But, you know, if it's something, yeah, like you know, those rock caches that we talked about, which you mentioned here, if you put one rock cache in the garden that's got some identifier on it, I love those. It's, you know, kind of a walk-up, look for it, and you grab it. And we've also seen some where it's a, like, birdhouse or something where it's just the door is painted on, it's not drilled in, and you open the back and you can grab the cache. You know, those kind of things, you know, I really enjoy. Plus, you get the garden, which is always kind of cool.
True, but at the same time, again, if you're not, if it's not placed by the person who maybe maintains the garden, people a lot of times when they're hunting caches don't necessarily think that this is other people's property that they're walking on top of landscaping. And you can do the geo trails, you can mess up flowers, you can do things like that. And that's really not going to be a good thing. It's going to be looked down upon on our sport here if we wreck people's private property.
Yeah, you don't want to, in any case, jeopardize the environment around it, because that's how caching gets a bad name, not to mention you just don't want to go, you know, trashing someone's garden.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Now, for our next item, one of the best things about geocaching is the places it can take you. There's those wonderful hidden scenic overlooks we talk about where only a cache can bring you. So hiding a small or regular cache behind a rock at the overlook can be a great way to share that view with your fellow cachers. Just don't fall down the cliff.
Now, that, Monty, yeah, that is a good thing. Like you say, there is one of the caches we hit in southern Indiana. I can't remember the name. Captain McCary's Vault, I think, is what it's called. And it's awesome. You hike up this pretty steep hill, and especially if you do it from the in the sunrise, it's pretty cool. I'll try to link to some of the pictures we took there in our show notes here. But just amazing sunrises. And, you know, I would never have seen that had it not been for geocaching. Again, there was we had just rained, and so we had to watch out for slipping, things like that. But it was an amazing place for a cache. And, you know, lots of people had been up there, and even the people who go up there not geocaching didn't know that there was a cache up there. And it was amazing.
Well, and a lot of the people that go up for these kind of locations who aren't cachers aren't really going to be looking for it. They're going to be more preoccupied with the nice scenic overview, so you hide it in kind of a little bit out of the way spot. You know, no one's really going to think twice about it. So that's a nice one for hiding. You got to be a little bit careful, though. You know, like Montu said, don't fall down the cliff. You know, you also have to watch out for washouts. So keep an eye on that kind of stuff. Make sure it's not too close to the edge so that your caches don't follow it or, you know, fall off the edge. But as a finder, make sure you bring your camera.
Yeah, definitely. I know I've found, thanks to geocaching, I found numerous small little out-of-the-way parks, you know, maybe 2-3 acres worth, you know, real small in comparison to some of the other places around that I had no idea were even there. In fact, when you look at the maps, it doesn't even show up as being a park on the map. One case in point was one of the caches that Jodster and I found over the weekend called Highland Park. GC24424. Now, we didn't actually manage to find the cache at this particular case because we wound up getting a whole herd of teenage muggles that decided to come in and play right at ground zero. So we backed off and explored the rest of the park. But it's a beautiful park. It looks like it's fallen into disrepair, but the city has just recently started to clean it up. And there's a beautiful boardwalk that goes out over Lake Tarpon. Gives you an absolutely gorgeous view of the lake. And I had no idea that park's been there, and I've lived here all my life. And that park has been there for, according to the signs at the park, it's been there about 10, 20 years now. And I had no idea it was there, but thanks to geocaching, I found the park.
Yeah, you find some great locations that way, that's for certain. Now, we are running a little bit long, so we probably want to get through these next couple of points. But again, for those of you who are listening, make sure to call in your ideas for places that you'd like us to talk about in the next one of these. Now, being from Metro Detroit, though, there's a number of really cool old buildings I'd love to be able to bring people to. And I've thought about adding a cache container of some type as an external fixture. given a perfect building where it wouldn't cause any damage, and if I could get permission. I'm really not too sure, though, if I'd do it, because these buildings aren't necessarily in, you know, good neighborhoods.
Yeah, that is one of the things we need to look out for, is placing caches where you either have to drive through or where the cache itself is in not the best neighborhood, you know, because especially if we're not from around the area, we don't necessarily know ahead of time that they're bad, and we find ourselves in some pretty shady neighborhoods.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, we have to, as the finders, take some responsibility for, you know, recognizing if it's not a safe area and get out of there. You know, not just for this, but for, you know, if we don't think we can climb that hill safely, don't try it. You don't want to fall down and get yourself hurt or even killed. And same thing holds true in the city. There's the same kind of situations in the city.
True. Now, we've also talked about the cache that's on the International Space Station by Lord British. He also has a cache that's located at the bottom of the ocean. You don't need to get that extreme for a 5.5 cache. And there are some other great caches. There are a few that scuba caches. Perhaps I'll get to do one someday. I don't know, because I don't have a scuba license right now. But, you know, a cache in a sunken ship would be cool. Again, it goes back to safety. I mean, granted, those are kind of the kind of caches you are meant to have special gear. And I think that if you want to make a 5.5 cache that needs scuba, it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, but like you were saying on the wreck dive, you know, wreck diving is a particular discipline. It's a, you know, very different kind of sport. You know, it goes kind of back to the same thing. You got to be aware of your surroundings. And in wreck diving, that's really tough, because, you know, in no time at all, you can get yourself lost and run out of air and be dead before you know it. So, you know, if you're going to do those kind of things, you got to have that knowledge, that expertise, which you don't want to do just to go caching. You know, pick that kind of stuff up on your own, you know, without going through that. And being a wreck, you don't really want to be placing caches in a wreck where someone died. You know, be respectful for those lost souls. Don't go tampering with their grave.
Now, as Daryl mentioned earlier, this is the end of our topics for tonight as far as the locations that we have for tonight. But this is definitely not the last time we're going to do a good, bad, ugly cache locations. So if you do have a cache location you'd like us to talk about, make sure to shoot us an email via the contact page on our homepage, which is geocachingpodcast.com, or go ahead and call us 206-3503-GPS. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. If you found any value in this content of this podcast, please consider helping us make this show sound just a little bit better by visiting geocachingpodcast.com/support. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call in our voicemail, 206-3503-GPS, anytime, and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.